She's feisty, she's funny, and she tells it like it is. Get ready for Empower Readings with Corby Mitlide. What are your opportunities right now? What are the possibilities? Ask Corby and cross the bridge from fear to fearlessness and fly. Here's your host, Corby Mitlide.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the July Past Life Party. Now, first thing I have to tell you, Mercury is retrograde, guys. If you don't know what that is, let me explain you. Three times a year, the planet Mercury looks like it's doing the backwards moonwalk in the heavens, and that's called going retrograde. When it goes retrograde, it is famous for computer screw-ups, communication snafus, etc. We've already had quite the party tonight trying to get the computers to work so that I can use Skype, which is my favorite form of talking with you guys because it sounds more like me. But please be patient with us tonight, because some things may take a little bit longer than they usually do. Now, there are several of you who have already written me on Facebook, and those are the people that, if they call in, I want to get on first because they have raised their little paws. But let me tell you how tonight is going to go. It is a special single subject hour. And by that, I mean we are going to be taking calls for people's past lives for the entire show. Now, don't just call and say, so did I have a past life? I'll tell you right now, oh yeah, you did. Hundreds. If you think that we're smart enough to get it all done in one lifetime, let me disabuse you of the notion. These lives that we go through, male, female, rich, poor, smart, dumb, whatever, is because the soul needs lots and lots of experiences to bring back to the immanence. We're down here, Earth is school, we're down here learning certain things. So each lifetime is a little different. Y'all know what I'm doing this time. The lifetime just before this one, I was an Italian-American Catholic in Chicago, a very ordinary life. The one before that one, I was a World War I pilot. The one before that one, I was a Philadelphia-based doctor who was on the Union side in the American Civil War, and back and back and back and back. So when you call in with a past life, what I need to know from you is something that will tell me where in your Akashic library I need to go. So instead of saying, did I have a past life or was I a guy once? The way I've had a lot of these structured is perfect. I have an obsession with New England. What is this all about? My three-year-old acts a lot like my late mother that I had real difficulties with. Is she in contact with my mother? Was she my mother in a past life? Does the three-year-old have a past life connection with my mother? I'm afraid of spiders. Why is this? Now, get your dialing fingers ready. 248-809-3475. That's 248-809-3475. That's the number I want you to call. That is our listener line. And basically, the first one who calls is the first one who gets in. I can get everything on for you. So let's start out. I will use one of the people that I sent, okay? Let's look at Adele Bermudez. For the past 30 years, I kept dreaming of being inside a house that I am buying or have purchased. It's always inside an old home, painted white, with many doors that I keep being shown to go in. This house makes me feel elated. A warm, fuzzy feeling. Oftentimes, there seems to be a second story on this house with plenty more empty rooms that I didn't know were there. Let's get on Sunny Straight. Sunny, are you there?
Hi, Corby. How are you?
I am fabulous. Let me just toot your horn a little bit before we go into this. Straight is, in a sense, related by sensei, in that he and I both strong colleague connections with Wendy Pini of ElfQuest and Mask of the Red Death. That is how Sunny and I got to know each other. When I said that we were doing past lives, Sunny very generously waved his little paw and said, me play. So, Sunny, tell me a little bit about this vision that you had.
Well, I was meditating. It was about 16 years ago. And I started focusing on my past and seeing how far back I could remember. And I was getting really clear visions of my own memories of this life. And I was pushing it back further and further. And all of a sudden, I just had this vision of being in being a very old man, walking through a desert towards this shack. It was my home. And I was very calm, but I realized that I was dying, and I just wanted to make it inside the shack before I died. And then I opened the door, and as soon as I closed the door, I fell down, and that's as far as I could remember.
Okay. You have any idea of what your...
I'm sorry, you broke up.
Your clothing is like... I know I have
no vision,
but I want to see if it matches yours.
I couldn't picture my clothes. I was just I was picturing the shack that I was walking towards, and the sun was. I felt good on my bones, but I realized that I was not here, going to be here much longer.
Mm-hmm. Because what I'm getting is this is actually 1930s Dust Bowl,
and 1930s Dust Bowl.
Yeah, you know the reference?
Yeah, I'm writing it down now.
Oh, okay. And what I'm seeing is that you are First Nations. I use the Canadian term. I guess down here it's Native American. You're looking either, I'd say probably Apache. And okay. Your point is that you had spent everything you could, your food, your water, your effort, on helping those Native Americans who were doing the migrant worker thing. If I think The Grapes of Wrath is a very famous book about the Dust Bowl. And you literally had given every single thing you had. Your well was dry. You knew that now it was your time to lie down and die.
Because, that's fascinating.
Yep. You had no fear. You knew what was going to happen. You knew where you were going. And you realized you had seen so many families with little children. And there was always that Native American respect for generations behind you, the ones to come. And that was one of the reasons that you went inside your shack. You did not want to scare the children that were there.
You know what? That's exactly what was in my head, too. I was afraid that if I died outside, that the animals could get to me first, and I didn't want people to find me that, especially the kids.
Perfectly understandable. I'm not surprised that there was a Native American connection, Southwest Indians. When you worked on ElfQuest, I don't know how you felt about the people in the Sun Village, but there was probably a little understanding there that flowed that came from past memories.
Yeah, well, I've always had a connection to that, too. I mean, even in this life, I'm a descendant of the Alabama tribe and also the Choctaw.
Mm-hmm. So it's all still there. Perfect. Perfect, perfect. Mm-hmm. Okay. Apparently, we also have other people on the line. So any other questions about that particular life that you wanted to know? Or have we simply, what's the word I'm looking for? Check that off on the Yep, Got That list.
You know what? I've checked it on the Yep, Got That list, and now I'm going to look up more about the 1930s Dust Bowl and see if it triggers any more memories.
Wonderful. Keep me posted on what you got. Glad.
Thank you so much, Corby. I appreciate it.
Good to talk to you. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Now, next we have Adele. Adele, are you still with us?
I'm here, Corby. How are you?
Good. I started to read the piece that you had sent me when I wasn't sure that we were getting people on the air. We had a bit of a glitch. Adele, first of all, where are you from?
I'm in New York City.
Okay, so you're one of my New Yorkers. Okay, yes. Talk to me about this vision that you've had for decades.
I've had this dream for the past 30 years, I would say, in my early 20s. It's a dream that I'm inside an old home. Apparently, I purchased it at that moment, or it's being shown to me. It's old. A lot of doors. The walls are very white. It's a very bright house. And every time a door opens, there's a room. It's empty. However, there are several other rooms that are not expected or that I know. I mean, if it's a four-bedroom home, there's always more than what it's supposed to be. Oftentimes, there's also a second floor to the property that I go up the stairs, and yet there are more rooms being shown to me. And I'm elated. I'm so happy that I'm buying this house or that I own this house, that it's just a beautiful dream. The only room that I've been able to actually see that there's something physically there is a stark white, very sterile white kitchen. But beyond that, it's all a big home, old white walls. And that's it. It just makes me very happy. And I'm just wondering if it has anything. Should I pay attention to this? Is it a past life? Is it telling me do what you need to do? Because I'm also obsessed with buying this home, a home in a small village in upstate New York. And I just don't know what this dream really means in reality or if it's a past life.
Okay. I do not believe the home is up here in Sharon Springs. Though, of course, we'd love to have you as a neighbor. Sharon Springs is a fabulous place. It's mm-hmm. just 15 down, miles down the road from me, and I love it. You could get a house like that in Sharon Springs, absolutely. But what I'm seeing is interesting. The 20s and 30s, same time period as Sunny, our last caller, but a totally different place. It is as if I'm seeing you somewhere down in the southeastern part of the state of Georgia. And what I'm seeing is you're actually going back to, if you will, the family manse. It ain't just a four bedroom, my dear. It is a large white house, not quite plantation, but the kind of house that you might have seen if you watched GCB, that series that was on very shortly earlier this year. It was your family house that was either badly damaged or taken over by Union soldiers. And because you married somebody wealthy from the north, part of the deal with the wedding is you were able to come down and reclaim the family manse, which you did. So what you're envisioning is the first time you went in when the entire thing was restored. That's why there are rooms and rooms and rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Why the kitchen looks very sterile because you haven't moved in yet. But this is a returning to what you knew. It is a reclaiming of family. Because I think that is really, really important to you. You're not a wanderer. You're not someone who just goes tooling around everywhere. You need to nest. And if you're in New York City, it's a little difficult to nest in New York City because it is so crazy and so busy and people move around so much. When you move up to upstate New York, you're going to have that nesting instinct relaxing you. Do you understand that?
I understand it perfectly.
Does that make sense to you about what I saw for a past life for you?
Yes, indeed. Indeed. I often thought about a plantation, but somehow I didn't think so. But you're on the money. You really are. It's not a plantation, so it's a smaller home, not as large as a plantation.
No. I the kind of house I'm thinking of is if you ever go see the movie Midnight at the Well of Good and Evil, I forget what it's called. But that's a movie from 10, 20 years ago. And the kind of house I'm seeing there, which is clearly not a plantation, but a large house, it has that feel. Okay. So there are some places in Sharon Springs that have those, you know, Southern column portico kind of things you might want to look at. But at any rate, your sensibility now is north of the Mason-Dixon line, not south. So just take that dream and bring it up here to the Catskills and the Adirondacks, and I think you'll be right on target.
I'm looking forward to that, Corby. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Glad that you called in.
Thank
you. All right. Now, I think that we have enough time to do one more before break, and I believe we have Teresa with us. Teresa, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Teresa, where are you from?
I'm from Canandaigua, New York.
Okay, another one of my New Yorkers, but not quite down in the five boroughs. Tell me, tell me about what your vision is, the past life hair up the nose, we'll call it.
Well, my boyfriend and I feel that we're pretty certain we've been together before in a past life. And we both get the feeling that we've been together around water. And he thinks possibly that he may have been on the Titanic. And he sometimes thinks I might have been too.
Okay. Now, the Titanic is only one ship that sank. But it's the one that it knows. It's like people who think, well, I know that I have I was beheaded or some, or hurt in a past life, so I guess I was Anne Boleyn or I was the Earl of Essex or whoever.
Right.
I do see the two of you on a boat on a very, very rough sea, and it was before the time of the Titanic, but not a whole bunch. I'm thinking 1880s, both of you coming in from, let me see if I can figure out where, Russian immigrants. When I was trying to picture it, I put my hand in the air and visualized the European map, and my hand went over to Russia. So it was a very rough passage. At one point, you nearly were thrown over the side, like Jack Saves Rose. Your current boyfriend grabbed hold of you right around the legs. You were two-thirds over the edge, but he held on to you. And remember, back in those days, third-class steerage was really not a pleasant place to be. If you were on deck, you just kind of huddled there with a lot of other people. And you had never been on a boat before this. So you didn't have what they call sea legs. You were seasick. And you were trying to get some air, get just not throw up on the deck, but over the side. And that is when you almost lost it. So he is right on target. And it's sort of the same time period, around 1880. I would say that you want to look at the part of Russia. It's the, I believe it's Belarus. You're going to have to look up how to spell that, but you'll find it online.
What is it called?
Bielorus, B-Y-E-L-O-R-U-S-S, I think. I'm hearing it. I'm not seeing it in front of me. And like I said, I believe that you were both Jewish immigrants. I don't know what your background is now, but you were there were waves of what they called pogroms around the turn of the century is when they were really bad, but you were escaping early. It was you and your brand new husband. You were not bringing any kids with you. But that is the sense I've got. This time you're trying to get your relationship going on land first. It was a successful marriage as far as I can see. So I wouldn't be surprised if you did it again. This time working on a joint life task for both of you instead of just, well, we managed to meet. Because in Russia, in the 1880s, it was, can we get from the old world to the new and get planted? Now you've gotten planted. Now it's a matter of doing for the kids you would have. Okay?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. We often wondered if we, were together before, and actually we've been through some turbulent times, and we were wondering if maybe, that's what happened before, too, that... he feels as though he doesn't want to let go because he feels like he's lost me before.
Mm-hmm. Well, he almost did. It kept you from falling over the side, so you're good. Okay?
Okay.
Okay,
all right,
great.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Trish. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, it's Corby Mitlide. It's the Past Life Party on Power Readings. After break, we'll be taking more of your calls at 248-809-3475. That's 248-809-3475. We will talk to you.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Ugh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Play ball!
Now pitching, Dave Black.
Dave is about to catch his opponent off guard. Not with his nasty fastball, no. Instead of a fastball, Dave will be hurling a tomato.
And the pitch.
Ooh. Using tomatoes as baseballs won't go over well with anyone. But if you're looking to hit the ball further and throw better, eating a healthy diet that includes fruits and vegetables is a home run. Packed with nutrients, they could help keep your body healthy and strong, giving you the energy you need to hit that grand slam. When you look at it this way, eating tomatoes is playing hardball against the competition. Run, throw, think, eat better. Can your food do that? Find out at smallstep.gov.
That's smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Paul, we do have somebody on the line right now that I'm going to get to, but after that, 248-809-3475. 248-809-3475. We have time for more people. All right, I believe that we have Amira on the line. Amira, am I pronouncing it right?
Yes. Hello?
Hi. Yes, Amira. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from San Antonio, Texas.
Oh, I think you're no, you're not my first Texan. You're my second Texan because Sonny is a Texan. We don't get a lot of Texas on the air. We tend to get a lot of California and New York. So terrific. Now, what can we do for you? Tell me about the past life that you want to look at.
Well, for the last couple of years, I've been drawn to the New England area. My husband and I are looking to move to a cooler climate. The heat is starting to get to me. I've become very sensitive to the sun, and I don't want to live in southern Texas where it's hot as hell, you know, 6 months out of the year. So I've been, you know, we've looked at Colorado, we've looked at the Rhode Island, Massachusetts area, and I've had this longing to be in Rhode Island, Massachusetts. I've not had much of a desire to really go to Colorado. I know part of my reason for moving is, you know, because of the health and the sensitivity to the sun, but I'm curious I'm more curious as to why I would be drawn to one particular region over the other.
What this is literally hip deep in the ground. You weren't in Rhode Island or Massachusetts. What I'm seeing is Maine, okay, and you were up in the northern part of Maine that's close around the, you know, the Canadian border kind of thing. And believe me, it's colder up there than in Rhode Island, so that may be what you're coming down for. But I'm seeing you, if you will, hardscrabble farmer, male. When I try to get a picture of what the two of you look like, it's a Maine version of that American Gothic with the guy with the pitchfork and the woman with the apron. And they both they've eaten pickles, but not you guys. You guys had about 6 or 7 kids, and you were central for a little village that would later become a town. I'm hearing caribou. I don't know if that's up north or whatever. I do not have a map in front of me. But what I'm seeing is you were the people that basically made the town. Your wife was in charge of teaching the kids. I don't think it was a one-room schoolhouse then. I don't think that that was that part of America. I think that tended to happen mid-19th century. But what I am seeing is she would teach the local kids at least, you know, how to read through the Bible, how to sign their name. You kept the crops going. You taught the kids how to fish. Everything about New England said to you, I'm alive. I'm in the middle of God's country. Nobody can touch me here, because your people were very much patriots, your parents during the American Revolution. And so they had been, if you will, uber patriots. Total contempt for the king, total contempt for royalty. You only valued what you did with your own hands, and you valued the ability to read and write. You know, this was not a John Adams intellectual family, but it was a family that realized if you wanted to be someone of consequence, you needed to be able to converse, you needed to be able to write letters, things like that. That's one of the reasons that I think you've gone back to New England through academia. because it's not just a matter of I want to go and visit, oh, look at the pretty ducks in the pond. It is going back to what was important, to what was started during the revolution. There's a deep sense of rightness when you put your feet on New England soil. And Texas just isn't your place. Does this make sense to you?
Yeah, it does.
I understand that. Oh. Go ahead.
I was going to say that's kind of funny. I've lived in Texas the majority of my life until about January when I moved up there to start the master's program.
Mm-hmm. Well, but it felt like going home, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It did. There was a lot of deja vu. There was just loving being in the country again, being in the woods, being just gardening again. I mean, it just really felt comfortable, really felt good.
People have a sense of place. I grew up in South Jersey, and I've lived in Philadelphia, and I've lived Buffalo, and I lived in Atlanta for 7 years, and I went to school in Rhode Island. But the place that I literally just sink in my boot heels and I'm home is here in upstate New York, northern Hudson Valley, eastern Mohawk Valley. If you had asked me any place in the world you want to live, I wouldn't change where I am. This is home. So is there another past life for me here? There might be. But what you're feeling is the call back to one of the lives that was clear cut, that you did good work, that you fulfilled everything that you had planned to fulfill when you planned the life. So I think that if you and your family can get back to New England, you're going to find that your soul's energy revs up quite a bit. And you'll find yourself getting to get up every morning, excited to see what the day brings. So if you can get back there, I think that's a great, great thing for you and your family. Okay?
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Okay, we have Lori on the line. Lori, hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Lori, where are you calling from?
Troy, New York.
Okay, one of my locals. All right,
yes.
Lori. Past life situation for you that you need to look at?
Obsessions and recurring old karmic debt.
Okay, throw them at me. I'll see which one shows up.
Let's see. Basically, it's personal, abusive, being more recently being parents, boyfriends, significant others, et cetera, like same patterns repeating over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And they're all abusive toward you?
Yes.
In the same way or just different ways?
I would say in different ways.
Okay. Do you have a common thread?
More common thread would be the significant other boyfriends, emotional, physical.
Okay. All right. Looking back, I think that this is a balancing sort of thing. And people need to understand karma's not carrot and stick. It balances. So what I'm seeing for you is a lot of emotional neglect on your not being there for family, not being for anyone who cannot do for you. And what I'm seeing for you is basically a carpetbagger. Are you familiar with who the carpetbaggers were?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm not sure that it was right after the Civil War and it was a literal carpetbagger, but you were the kind of person that would go with the drop of a hat. If a scheme sounded good, if it was a way to make money, if it was a way to avoid responsibility, you were there. For you, it was almost not so much, can I get away with it, but can I get away with it and then get out of town to go find the next? Which is one of the reasons a lot of things have been love them and leave them for you. And why you are balancing out the emotional instability and unavailability you had done in that other life. Now, tactic perceived is no tactic, which is one of my favorite sayings, because once you know why things are happening, then you can say, all right, I've learned this lesson. It's enough. And you no longer have to keep repeating this. Realize that the most important thing for you in this life is be emotionally available, but don't be a doormat. That is the most important thing. Make sure that if there is a difficult situation, you do your best to deal with it. Certainly you don't stay around to be abused, but don't run away. Try and see if you can figure out what's going on so that you can also teach the person who is being abusive, this does not work. It looks like we may have dropped Lori, so I'm going to go to my next caller, who is Kelly. Kelly, welcome to Empower Readings.
Hi, Corby. Thank you very much.
What can I do for you, my dear? Give me your... first of all, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Horseheads, New York.
Okay, I guess this is mostly a New York show. Tell me about what the situation is.
I am petrified of heights, and it makes no sense because in this life I haven't fallen. I haven't had any issues. I don't know why I'm so afraid of heights. Afraid of elevators. I can't go in a building over the third floor. I'm afraid of bridges. It's white knuckles the whole way across the bridge, no matter how high the bridge is. Why am I so afraid of heights?
First thing I see for you, my dear, is a hot air balloon. And you were a female who wanted to fly. And this was, you know, we're talking the first 15 years of the 20th century. And so you were not one of the intrepid women who got your pilot's license. But go in a hot air balloon. There were several of those. And people would go up and they would take their little brownie cameras and all kinds of things like that. And you went up with a boyfriend who said he knew what to do with this. He did not. He had bribed the guy who normally had you up there, you know, was the normal hot air balloon guy who knew what was going on. To let him take it because he wanted to do a marriage proposal and he didn't want to be with other people around. But your guy did not know what was going on and you were buffeted by wind and he literally fell out. And you watched him plummet to his death and there was nothing that you could do. You had to wait until the balloon landed several hours later, where you didn't know where you were in hysterics. It took you about 2 days to get back to where you were to deal with your fiance's body. You never married, and it was the most horrible experience that you could have possibly imagined. So from then on, you wouldn't go over water. You wouldn't walk up mountains. You limited yourself to basically a 1 mile radius where the ground was flat and you knew where you were and you could get to your house rapidly.
Wow.
So it ain't going to happen a second time. For one thing, we have way too many laws and rules now. Nobody could get away with that. But that's what the height thing is. So you probably also feel better on level ground than on mountains too.
Oh yeah.
So, but it's not going to happen again. I promise you it will not. Okay.
Wow. Okay. Wow. So, do I still have karma with that guy who died?
Well, you didn't kill him.
Well, I know, but I was tragically upset about the whole thing, and they was going to marry me.
Yes, he was. I don't detect that he's back in your life yet. How old are you at this point?
47.
How old?
47.
Oh, tch. You got lots of time left. Lots of time left. So it's very possible that you will meet him. You may not have a marriage agreement this time, but I have a feeling there will be somebody, male, that you save from emotionally falling from a great height later in life. And
wow,
you will have that click and lock friendship with that guy, and you will know, oh, it's you. Well, let's see if we can keep your feet on the ground this time.
Cool.
Got it?
Cool. Yes. Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much.
Hey, I'm just telling you what I'm getting the reports of from upstairs, but I'm glad that it worked.
Wow. Well, you know what? I'm not in a hurry to go in any hot air balloons either. I'm still keeping my feet on the ground.
Smart girl.
Thank you very much.
Great call. Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
You too.
248-809-3475. That's 248-809-3475. If you want to join us on the past life party and you've got some place that you want to explore in your past, give us a call. If you hadn't gotten in tonight, or perhaps you saw the past life party listed on Facebook and said, darn, I'm not going to be around, there is another way that you can get to explore past lives with me. One of the ways is with Bella Spree Magazine. That's B-E-L-L-E-S-P-R-I-T. Bella Spree Magazine has a column with me called Corby's Wayback Machine. And every month I pick two or three people who have written in and I do a quick past life reading for them. If you really want to explore some serious stuff, then get in touch with me through firethroughspirit.com and we can set up a one-on-one session, because sometimes when people are looking at past life experiences, they're terribly personal and a little scary, and maybe you don't want to do it in print or on the air, and I totally get that. Some people that wrote in and had questions for me. We got an email from Haley. Haley says, my mother passed away 7 years ago, and our relationship was very strained the last 10 years of her life. She died from alcoholism. I've always felt like she's a pretty strong force in my three-year-old daughter. I wonder if you can feel any connection between them. Yeah, I can, Haley. Number one, remember that grandparents get the delight of getting to play with the kids before they're actually born. It means they don't have to play with diapers or, you know, feeding them and cleaning up the yort or anything like that. But your child's soul gets to interact with their deceased relations before they get down here. But I'm seeing specifically with your three-year-old that she has also had lives battling the bottle. Not female. I see a male life, and this is in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and this is someone who had been a relatively good fisherman, lobsterman, but the bottle got the better of him. And so since your mother dealt with alcoholic problems this lifetime, she is working on a soul level with your daughter so that she does not have to continue that. In fact, your daughter may actually be a teetotaler. Your daughter may, when she's older, be against alcohol or drugs. And that's not a bad thing. So I would say the connection with your mother is strong. Your mother is, in a sense, a spirit guide, a guardian angel for your daughter. And she'll always keep an eye out on her. The thing that I stress to a lot of people is, when our relations transition, they're not always, if you will, by the phone. Because remember, we may have relations from this life, but when we die and we're out of the body, we also have all the other people up there. When I transition out of the body this time, it will not only be seeing my father, my mother, my stepmother, my uncles, all those people. But it will also be a great reunion with all of the folks that I flew with in World War One. It may be seeing some of the Union soldiers that I saved as a doctor in the Civil War. We may even get together with some of the people that I fought with back in the medieval days. I know that I was a warrior then. Not always famous. You don't always get to be famous. But the connections, even if you're not famous, are just as important and just as enduring. In your case, however, I think that your mom felt it was very important to keep close tabs on your daughter to help her avoid her own karmic pitfalls and learn from your mom's lessons. So don't be surprised if your daughter says that she sees your mother or she talks to her invisible friends. It could very well be that your mom is keeping, as I say, close tabs on your daughter. Now, there was another one from Hope from Pennsylvania. I have a friend. We've been together before and we know it. We'd like to know what we've come together to accomplish this time around. Her name is Amy. And what I see for both Hope and Amy, suffragettes, we're talking, working on getting the vote for women in the United States. This is then sometime between 1915 and 1920. You would bail each other out of jail because the suffragettes were often arrested. You would support each other's families. You would plot. You would plan. Your whole thing was, let's get women equality. Let's be more than the baby breeders, the cooks, and the washerwomen. Both of you were what were called blue stockings. You both went to, I'm seeing one of the female colleges, so it may have been Radcliffe, it may have been Pembroke, which is the female half of Brown University was. One of the very high-level Ivy League Seven Sisters schools. So you had a real sense of history, you had a sense of intellectualism, and you were fighting for your less intelligent, less capable sisters. You knew that it was going to be a long battle. You frankly weren't even sure that the vote would be gotten in your lifetime, but you didn't care. You were going to fight for that. So I don't know what you and Amy are doing this time. What I will tell you is that anything the two of you put your mind to gets done. You're probably both ornery. You're probably both have a good sense of stick-to-itiveness, and you will probably always have each other's back. Hopefully this time it will not be something like the vote. It'll be something that is a little more enjoyable and less fraught with being arrested. But you guys have done this partnership many, many times before, and it is definitely something that is going to continue for this lifetime as well. So we are coming up on the end of the past life party for this month. I always do it at least once a month, usually on the third Thursday. The only times that I'll fudge that is if the third Thursday is a solstice or an equinox. That is always reserved for my dear friend Sherita Starr, who is the astrologer, numerologist, lexigramist, because having her in when we're doing seasonal changes, she comes up with some of the best stuff in the world, and I absolutely love it. Then the first Friday, Thursday of the month is usually open mic night. Open mic night, yes, we can still do past lives, but that's also if you have specific questions, career, romance, anything like that. How are your kids doing? I think that mothers may spy on their kids any way they like. You can do that. Those are the ones where we can take anything you're curious about and work with it. And if you have a question that is just general, for instance, what's the difference between a natal chart and a progressed chart, or I was adopted, does that make a difference in my numerology, or I keep seeing angels, what's that about? Those are all the things that we definitely talk about at that point. So to wrap it up for the week, thank you so much for all of our callers. We had a great time. If you are interested in playing with past lives with me, you can do it either through the Past Life Party here once a month. You can go to Bel Esprit Magazine. I believe that's bellesprit.com. And send me a note at revcorby@gmail.com so that I can then do a past life reading with you in the magazine. Or you can get to firethroughspirit.com and set up a one-on-one appointment with me. I'm always delighted to work with you. Next week will be our shaman guest. And we've got a lot of other people planned. I think I'm booked all the way through October now. We've got John Fortuna is coming back. I'm going to have Ali Cheslick back. Andrew Brewer, has the rock and roll psychic, has said he will play with us as well. So it's going to be a wonderful and delicious couple of months. Don't miss it. You can always find me on Facebook at Corby Mitlide. Sign up for the fan page, firethroughspirit.com. That's where you'll always see what we're going to do, because I will always post first thing on Thursday morning who our show guest is going to be and what you should do about calling in, because you guys are what make the show. Without my callers, it's just me and the crickets, guys, and I can hear myself talk at home. I'd much rather know that I'm making a connection with all of you people out there. You're getting something wonderful out of this, and we are helping you on your own road of enlightenment. So stay tuned. My good buddy, the Fark Man, David Franklin Farkas, is going to be doing his show live right after mine. And then we will be back with you next week. So until then, have a terrific 7 days. Keep the cards and letters coming. And we will talk to you on Empower Readings. See you then.